we are in business because of the first-time founders. The reality is, who doesn't love a disruptor? 60% of the unicorns are first-time founders. 40% is experienced founders.
For the founders that we backed when they were young, what did they look like when they started? When I'm talking to the younger founders or the first-time founders, right?
Yeah.
Basically, there's, like you said, it cuts both ways. So what could be perceived by one as clarity of thought could simply be a deterministic route to failure for somebody else, right? And hence, this whole question of, is this a naive slash immature view on the world versus is this clarity, first principle thinking, visionary, right? It's very tough to figure that out. And I'm a minted new VC in some form. So I'm figuring out my own patterns. But it's very difficult to figure out in that first sort of hour, right, of the interaction. So how do you make some of these decisions to say, you know, I don't understand the thesis. The market's only evolving. Nobody understands the thesis.
Yeah.
Is this clarity of thought or is this not knowing enough?
So speed matters. Bounce from one thing to the other and is all, it's a feature, not a bug. 1 to 10, it's a bug, not a feature. So, you know, physics talks about velocity versus speed. And you know, we talk about that internal to us also. Velocity is when you have hustle with direction, not misdirected. I joke about mindless, but it's actually more misdirected hustle, right? Your organization gets, you know, moving from thing to thing. And that's when you hear about, you know, everything seems broken and stuff like that. So that's where Org 2.0 comes in. You need to get people. So Org 1.0, you need hustlers. Org 2.0, you need hustlers who can think. Founders, by the way, have to also navigate this journey themselves. So here, I would say, again, high burn rates with marketing spends I have seen as an issue because people are focused on new customer acquisition. That's the failure zone. They are not still going deep enough and focus on retention. And therefore, it's a leaky bucket problem, right? That you keep acquiring and they keep churning out. Second, people believe I will fix margin long term. You cannot. Most businesses, unless you are a Ola, Uber, highly network effects, whatever, margins get set very early in the business. Fix them early. We were just having that discussion the other day with one of the companies. So the focus is on revenues, but not enough on unit economics. Those Zerpera days, you know, zero interest rate stuff that happened over the last 10 years is gone permanently. Cost of capital will not be zero. Therefore, when cost of capital is not zero, you need to focus on your payback period, lifetime value, LTV to CAC, all unit economics metrics, which I think people believe that they'll get it with scale. Final failure point, processes. There are no processes. And you know, we are somewhere in that journey that we are trying to figure that. 10 to infinity, actually now, not graduating to the level where you are organizationally or maybe at the founder level, having thinkers who can manage hustlers.
Mm.
You yourself need to be able to do that. You as a founder have to say, where do I have to be in this quote-unquote founder mode? And you're applying founder mode everywhere. And you're not letting your... Maybe you're hiring smart people, but suffocating them and they'll leave, right? So I think there's at the founder level, still looking at unit economics and not cash flows.
Yeah.
It's time to graduate to cash flows. Do whatever marketing you want to do, but with earn it. Earn the right to do it with your cash flows, right? So I think that's very important. Actually, interestingly, contra to the first two, not spending enough on marketing.
Mm.
When you have great retention, cohorts, all of that, use your own cash, but spend on marketing and expand. Okay, don't be too conservative. Losing touch with customers, big failure point. What got you here, always remember and be grateful for that.
Mm.
And you know, the other day I read I was with Bhavish last night at a service center. It's well known. I mean, he's publicly talked about the fact that he's focused on fixing it. He's sitting there. He is sitting there and we are talking to customers. And so just a different level of relentlessness on that. Dipinder was out doing a Zomato delivery. He does that all the time. Jeff Bezos used to take customer service calls. Ankush, we are meeting him next. He takes customer service calls. Have to do that. And systems need to be layered on top of processes. First, 0 to 1 tends to be people dependent. 1 to 10 needs to become process dependent. 10 to infinity, processes should be systematized, which means tech should be running them.
Yeah. Right?
People should actually become dispensable if you really want to become infinity. Yep. And you know, we are talking about that as a journey. Finally, a real infinity gap is, and I see it often with companies that see success very quickly and they are on the infinity journey, they forget about moats.
Yep.
Ultimately, somebody, if you are successful, somebody is coming after you.
I also want to sort of step back a bit, right? And look at what a first-time founder is dealing with now, like a to-be first-time founder in some form. The ecosystem has matured, which means there's mentors everywhere, there's angels everywhere, your friends have started up, they've made money, there are successful founders, some of them closed their companies, failures, etc. So it's mature. Personally, from my experience, the founders that I'm meeting today, and it could be any age, young, old, whatever, seem to be much more mature and aware of business fundamentals, ki ROSI kya hai, payback kya hai, how should I look at round sizing, how do I want to look at burn rates, etc. So there's a lot more information now in this world, and podcasts, etc. are helping disseminate a lot of that as well. What I've also been seeing is all of this extra information and extra jazz around starting up is also leading to a lot of existential questions to the either a young founder, to be young founder or operator in a company, to say, you know, maybe I should start up. You know, I seem to be playing it safe. Maybe I can also do it. Why am I not doing it? This seems to be the thing that everybody who's smart is chasing. So I should risk it as well, right? I don't want to spend some time on that. It does lead to some element of peer pressure. So the caveat is they're all much smarter than I was.
Yeah.
And how founders were, I think, 5-10 years back.
Yeah.
So they do articulate visions and all of that much better. And they do think through the problem much better as well. But somewhere I also feel some of this is peer pressure / the feeling of why not? Maybe I can also make it.
Yeah.
What's the advice you'll sort of give them?
First of all, the younger the person, the more privileged and they are about the times we are living in for India. I feel I am privileged at my age. But, you know, we have spoken about the overall opportunity, the GDP growth. It is India's time, okay? And what people may not realize is that there are probably only two countries, but I'll give some more context. See, if you look at technological disruption, it's not technology the way we know it. It is what is the technology the way that was relevant for that phase of the world's evolution.
Yeah.
So it goes all the way back to the invention of the wheel. Okay. Then it goes to steam engine. Then it goes. So if you look at when countries exploded in growth, US exploded post World War II on the back of industrialization. It was the industrial age and infrastructure. Japan exploded on the back of hardware technology. South Korea, Taiwan combined that and exploded on the back of copying Japan. China exploded a little bit like us, which was on the back of internet, but also infrastructure and investment. India's soft infrastructure, we all have been, you know, you live in a beautiful city, Bangalore, where, you know, we were going through puddles and all of that. So Mumbai is much better now. So we have always had the envy of the West and even China of saying hard infrastructure nahi hai. Hamara soft infrastructure world mein number one hai, right? So you are now sitting at the beginning, maybe 2-3 years into it, of a 15 to 20 year journey, which is why 2047 and Z47, right? Where this is all going to explode over the next 20 years on the back of technology and soft technology. Stuff that we have always had an edge in.
Yep.
Young workforce, IT enabled since 25, 30 years. And guess what? The world has moved in that direction, right? So to me, we should just count our blessings. And the youngest people, there's a movie called Wall Street. People should see. The main actor's father, he actually says to him that, what is it that you do? You make a lot of money. This is the guy who pioneered greed is good, right? So this movie that pioneered it. So he says, do something real in life. Create something. Don't make money by just moving money, right? That's my advice. I think we are in the moving money business.
Yeah.
But I am inspired by venture capital and early stage because at least you can see creation around.
Yep.
What motivates me to do this forever is the founders, is the fact that you see a Ola electric scooter running around, which is changing things, is the fact that a Country Delight has better products, is the fact that a One Card, I mean, I'm just talking about a few companies in our portfolio. There's so many. AI, what we are, you know, the companies are doing. So I do think we are partners with people who are making a serious difference. And that keeps me going. But my advice to younger people, sometimes people in their 20s come and ask me, how do I become a VC? I say, don't. Boss, pehle kuch karo. Go and create something, right? You have tried to create, I tried to create. So we have done it all in our own way, right? So I am a deep believer that this is the time for entrepreneurship. But, and I was having this discussion with my son maybe 5-6 years ago. There's this concept of Ikigai. We have a podcast, which way before we used to have this framework of passion, skill set, opportunity. Ikigai is do something that you love, that the world needs, that you're good at, and you can make money doing. If you're at the center of that, you can be happy forever in life, right? And rich also. And then there are some joking things like if you're doing something where everything else works, but you cannot make money, you are happy but poor. And you can come up with, you know, some such line for each segment. So my son was telling, I was asking him, we were on an African safari. I said, what do you want to do? He said, first I want to make money and then I'll do what I like. I said, well, actually it's the other way around. Figure out what. So he's big time into fitness. He's going to go to college. He wants to do sports management degree in business, right? So I think you can make money doing almost anything.
Yeah.
And India has also reached that stage. Sports people are finally making money. Cricketers are making money. Now, forget cricketers. They started making money early, but every sport people are making money. So my advice, figure out your Ikigai. Figure out your Ikigai. Start only if you are at that place. Until then, stack odds in your favor. What does that mean? Go work with a founder. Don't go work in Google, Amazon, all these places. They are now too big. But they used to. 10 years ago, my advice was different. 10 years ago, my advice was go work at Facebook, Google, Apple. Get, because they are the, ultimately, and it's a bias you and I have, that best products win. And these are best product-driven companies. Yep. Today, the advice is different. Today, the advice is go work under a Bhavesh as a chief of staff. Learn on the job. Go maybe do product development because it interfaces with business. Maybe do a corporate strategy type of role because you're looking at the market. Get hands-on skills. Start a business where FMF is high. Founder market fit. And it should fit with Ikigai, right? So don't just start something like I did, which was a business plan MBA downwards. Those days are over.
Yeah.
Be very experiential in what you start. Make sure you surround yourself with smart people and stack odds in your favor. If you don't have that experiential idea, don't do the FOMO thing.
Yeah.
Don't do because your friends are doing this, that. It will come. And the other thing I tell these younger kids is, you are going to live to be 100. You are in some random hurry. And I, you know, we talk about mindless hustle. So don't just chill. You're going to live to 100. So in enterprise, it will be great. You have a great order book. Lot of land is happening. Where is the expand?
Yeah.
Build the customer success function early. In terms of B2C, look at your cohorts. Go check your NPS. Go check the habit score. I think you and I spoke about it. I like Sean Ellis's habit score, which basically says, so NPS everybody knows. CSAT, which is customer satisfaction, everybody knows. I think the habit score is even more important. CSAT is telling you customer is happy or not. NPS is telling you customer will get you new customers or not. Habit score is telling you, will your customer miss you or not? It basically asks the question, I forget the exact question, but basically says, if I didn't exist, would you miss me? And if more than 40% of the people don't say they'll miss you, you have a problem.
Yeah.
You have not gotten deep into their life. That's your moat. In customer, consumer businesses, actually even in enterprise businesses. If I'm not going to be missed, it's a problem.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's the other gap.
No, that's useful. I think you had promised me before we started the podcast that by the end of this, I'll actually end up saying there isn't there isn't a lot of differences between a young founder and experienced founder, because this journey, I'd assume, is the same for all. It's the same for a company and a founder's journey in some form to go through. But it still doesn't solve the tactical question of, I'm a young founder, so I'm going to make you young again. Yeah. I'm going to make you 25 years old again. And I say, you know, you want a startup, let's assume you figure out a market that you like, your FMF is there, let's assume it's a B2C business. Now comes the question, should I raise, who should I raise from? There's angels, there's micro VCs, there's VCs. Yeah. How do I think of capital allocation? And more importantly, what's changed is, as the ecosystem's matured, a lot more people are ready to help you as well, right?
Yeah.
So how do I, we keep talking about being outside in, how do I utilize the ecosystem around me to start building and just increase my chance of success?
Yeah. So first of all, I resent the fact that you called me not young by saying I'm young. I have to imagine being young again. I am very young. I'm joking. So let me tell you my journey. So I think the headline is, you should have somebody who's a believer, but also a reality checker with you.
Mm.
And that generally is best played by somebody who is invested in you, and it has to be financially also.
Mm.
Otherwise, it's all gyan, right? Mm. So there was this gentleman called Scott Murphy in the US. I can't remember how I was introduced to him. I was in my mid-20s at that time, and he was in his 30s. He was an ex-entrepreneur, successful entrepreneur. I don't know how I got introduced to him. And I rarely use the word mentor, but he is the guy. I was working at Goldman. I almost got fired for doing this because I used to keep coming up with business plans. And I used to keep taking business plans to him. And Union Square Cafe in New York City was our favorite spot.
Sorry, you took new business plans to him?
Yeah.
Okay.
While working at Goldman. Okay. You're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
So almost got fired. So I would take the business plans and must have taken 5, 6, 7. And by the way, Suvir and me together. Sometimes actually 2, 3 other potential partners also. And then there was this moment where, you know, my desire for Goldman, for business, doing business in India, got me into trouble with Goldman. And they said, you have to pick one or the other. I said, I am going to go back to India. Goldman was advising Rediff at that time. So I went to Scott. And I remember where I was sitting with him. And I said, Scott, I am at this crossroads. I want to do this. Should I do this? And he said, Avnish, you are a Harvard Business School graduate and Goldman Sachs training and McKinsey had done internship. I know you make great PowerPoints and write beautiful documents.
Mm-hmm.
I never knew, and he said it this way, I never knew if you have the balls to actually be an entrepreneur. And so I said, okay, thank you, but I don't have the money. Because I was it wasn't actually 250, by that time it was $100,000 in debt. And he said, okay, let's talk and walk with me. So we walked 2, 3 blocks, ended up in his office, pulls out his checkbook. And he's like, how much? And I said, what do you mean? He said, you have no money to buy a ticket. It was literally, I don't have no money. So I said, $20,000. I said, maybe 100 to start, but start with 20 so I can buy a laptop, buy a ticket, go back to India, whatever. That's how it started. So he was the first angel investor, maybe made so that. And I said, terms. He said, I'll trust you. So that was how it started. No paper. I would have liked to say we wrote something on a napkin, not even that sexy, right? So no paper, his check. And he said, I know you will treat me fairly. So that 20 became 60, which became 100. Which I think he exited maybe 1 million+ later.
Let's
unravel. I don't even know if I fully answered.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. But let's unravel the point that you made on founder market fit.
Yeah.
We invest in multiple sectors, obviously.
Yeah.
There's B2B, we do semiconductors, there's AI, there's consumer, obviously, which you and I look at closely. Is every opportunity open for a first-time founder? Like, does founder market fit in terms of learned behavior over 10, 15 years not matter in all segments? So, and I'll provide examples.
Yeah.
There is a Zepto and Meesho that I would argue had to be built after a Flipkart and an Amazon was built, right? But it had to be built by a first-time founder in some form because they had to sort of re-ask themselves on a consumer tailwind and a market opening opportunity in some form.
So say more. Why couldn't, I may agree with one and disagree with the other, why couldn't Meesho and Zepto be built earlier without Flipkart?
So I'll take Zepto's example a little closer to me because I was in Foodpanda as well. So for the longest time, the narrative was you can't make money on picking stuff up from one place to the other. If the AOV doesn't make sense, there was a food delivery that went through a rut. So the common narrative, the common thesis was you can't do this very quick delivery on grocery that is lower in gross margin. How will you ever make money, etc.?
So what changed?
I think there was a math there that did make sense that people who are from the ecosystem like me might not have looked at, given what we had tried in the past and we were force fitting maybe Western models into India. You're looking at that sort of point of view. It needed somebody from outside to come show us that, you know, this is possible. And then obviously Dipinder will run away with Blinkit, etc. But it needed somebody to challenge that point of view to say, can you win a person?
No, so actually it's an interesting point. I was going to make the opposite argument, but now I've changed my mind. I agree with you. So I think Zepto, theoretically, the market construct didn't change.
Yeah.
Right? The business model, you are saying, wouldn't have worked. And what changed there is that the AOV, we had, when we did the negative thesis on it, we budgeted 250, 300 rupee AOV and you could never make money given delivery costs. But two, three things changed. Density within a neighborhood changed, which basically is internet evolution. I think people's willingness to pay for convenience changed, which probably 5-6 years ago wouldn't have happened, right? But the overall market structure didn't change as much. My view actually is quick commerce is not a company, it's a feature. Going forward, everybody will have it because now the customer wants it. So it's actually going to be very, very challenging to create a very profitable large business from it, is my view. Meesho is actually different and I agree with you there more. Meesho could not have existed before unless there were so many sellers in the market. And resellers in the market. And may not even have done well without COVID when people were stuck at home.
Yeah.
Right? Now, obviously, so if I go back, I tried to start the first marketplace businesses where there were sellers. Yeah. I had to go recruit the sellers. Literally, me and Suvir would go shop to shop, ki boss, aap log list kar do. Phir khud hum log spreadsheet se load karte
hain. Yeah.
So I think there I agree. So the timing of some of this matters. Now, coming back to your question, this question actually that you asked made me think the most. Part of me, I can argue both sides. Part of me says that first principles thinkers will always say, why not, and do it. Part of me thinks that they will do that, but they will not be set up for success. And I think the way I kind of finally bring it together is B2C versus B2B. That enterprise businesses may FMF, if I observe the successes we are seeing, people come with networks. They come with customers. They start with customers. Ab wo first time founder bhi karega. Hamara ek aur investment hai. Actually, first time nahi hai, wo bhi second time hai. Which is Grey Labs. You know, those guys are finding enterprise customers. I think the bar on their product then maybe goes up a little bit. So I would say, I was trying to think of a framework and I was thinking that, and we'll come back to moats later in terms of, you know, what makes organizations potentially not.
Within B2B, I would assume, because there's Ashish as well, there's Zetwork. So how would you split that out?
But Ashish is the contra example because he broke into it. Just relentless.
Correct.
Right? So like I said, it will always work. But if you have to say more likely, chances, probabilistic thinking, I would say B2B, probably people who have some unfair advantage, generally at the customer level. There is this concept called design partner in B2B. Design partner is ki boss, aap vacuum mein mat product banao. You co-design the product with the customer.
Yep.
It works in semiconductors, it works many places, a lot of software. Wo jo experience founder ke design partners khade hote hain. Right? And they know exactly the hole they have to plug, right? So I think that's one framework to think about. The other framework to think about it is, what is the trend line? Is it disruption? Is it innovation? Or is it execution? Right? Execution, agar disruption hai, toh most likely I could argue and experience could be a baggage, right?
Yep.
Is it innovation? I think both will do it.
Yep.
Both will be able to do it. Because both can innovate and maybe the younger ones or the first time ones will have more innovation in their head. If it's execution, maybe it's the experience guys. Because execution is helped by your entire network, right?
Yeah.
So, and the other, I think, commonality is we'll pick it up in the next one, is think about the moats. Not for, before you think about your own moats, what are the moats that you'll have to surmount, right, in this business? So again, many examples, right? Ola, Razor, Zepto, OneCard, Rocket Lane, Atomic Work, they are in this spectrum, right? And Atomic Work, we were in that meeting the other day, going up dead center against ServiceNow. You realize that the moats are actually negative. Well, inertia is a moat, for sure. Existing software and all of that is a moat. But the innovation that is required is so high. And the why now is so clear. Think about the why now. You know, that is critical. I think often people don't think about why now. Why? It goes back to probabilistic thinking and unknowns. Why hasn't this worked till now? Why will it? What has changed in the context that it will work now? What is my right to play? What is my right to win? Simple framework.
Yeah.
Right, today. 20 years ago, I didn't think like this. This applies in both B2B and B2C. But I think that's our thing.
And so, and let's stay on that point. So let's think probabilistically, which is we have to find out where the failure zones are. And those failure zones typically change by stage.
Yeah.
So I think it's time we sort of merge the two as well. Because the only difference I'm finding between a first-time founder and an experienced founder in our parlance is there's a little bit more sort of first principle thinking slash innovation that you may find in the first-time founder. There's a little bit more risk-adjusted PMF and just execution bias and excellence that you may find with the experienced founders. And honestly, there isn't much else different.
There isn't much else. And, you know, I would actually say innovation I don't agree with. I just think whether you call it naivete or fearlessness, it is actually a very attractive part of it, which is just they don't know what they don't know.
Yeah.
And that's a positive.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Yeah. Right? So it's very minimal, which is why, and we keep coming back to clarity of thought. We keep coming back to how strategic are you thinking? How quickly can you execute, etc. So if you were to say over the last 10 years, things have sort of, the ecosystem has matured as well. And if I were to say probabilistic thinking, going back to your diagram in some form, 0 to 1, 1 to 10, 10 to infinity, I'd make the argument to say what I read at least 5, 6, 7 years back would be slightly different from what we would advise now, given what we know more, the same probabilistic thinking, right?
Yeah.
So to help the founders make fewer mistakes and get to slightly more de-risked outcomes in some form.
Yeah.
How would you now shift the conversation on 0 to 1, 1 to 10, 10 to infinity?
And I would say probabilistic versus deterministic thinking sounds very complicated. So if there's one line takeaway that I want people to have, it is think in decision trees, not in straight lines. Okay? Because life is not in straight lines. Point A doesn't connect to point B. There are 50 other branches that you have to figure out. Now, and we have a podcast on burn rates. We have a podcast on Org 3.0 that we should, I think there's a one on PMF also that we should reference back here. But what is 0 to 1, 1 to 10, 10 to infinity, right? 0 to 1, you're looking for PMF. So PMF, scalable PMF, scalable, profitable PMF. That's it. Those are the three journeys of a company. And I think often we overcomplicate that, right? So what are the failure rates I've seen in 0 to 1? Burn rates. Your job is to get PMF. Don't market to get to PMF because you will get false negative. You may get false positive or false negative, right? PMF has to be driven by some problem that you're solving. And let's not worry. At some stage, we'll worry about whether that is scalable, profitable and all that. But are you solving it? Marketing is not a problem, right? So failure zone, very high burn rate without and potentially using marketing dollars without thinking customer backwards and deep enough about whether you have PMF or not. Worrying too much about competition. And I know there is this only the paranoid survive and I've read that book and I liked it. And I think there's a podcast on this also. As I've evolved my thinking, I have realized that focusing on competition is the wrong answer. Focus on customer and focus on what your competition is doing with your customer. Then you should worry about competition. is your competition doing a better job? But everything else, it just becomes too much of a mindless hustle. Now, if you look at the context of India, let's go back. I'll give a little bit of context. YC, young, everybody knows about YC now. But you know, YC was started in the bust of 2004.
Mm.
Paul Graham put out a post saying, everybody thinks technology is bust. It's a very famous post. But I believe in technology. I'm starting this. And it was for the entrepreneurs in the valley, which in those days were the younger founders. YC took off. YC took off, the VCs got FOMO. So bunch of well-known VCs set up seed programs. Now the seed programs and scout programs and this and that, and they competed with YC. Then what happened? Bunch of exits happened in the valley. Lot of founders got money, became successful. They started becoming very active angel investors. That actually today has graduated to a level where there are solo GPs, people who have, like a person like Ilad Gill, I think manages more than $1 billion, right? And they are all competing with each other. When we looked at this, we said, wait, India is going the exact same direction. And you know, we are founders first. We love founders. We are having a Diwali party. I think 50% more than 60-70% of the people at the Diwali party will not be our founders. There'll be people from the ecosystem, including other VCs. That's a joy of doing this.
Yeah.
We want to be the glue. This sharp elbowed stuff is not who we are. And I would say most of the well-known VCs are very similar now. So we said, I think these founders should start investing a lot more. So we have a program which we anchored, but now is much more independent, like you know, Akash yep. and Mohit run it, which is DVC, Decentralized Venture Capital. And it's built around the founders who are successful. So the founder should go take money from DVC. Because DVC is their best chance of success, because it has all the best founders, or 40, 50 of the best founders who have come together as a collective. That's what I would do. After that, they should take money from Z47. That's it. There's no answers beyond
that. That's it.
That's the answer. So we end on that. But on a serious note, we also have a 1 vs. 2 VC podcast. What would I do? I would take money from angels I respect, who can round out my edges or fill out my blind spots. So they have some exposure and experience that I don't have. I'd first take money from them, whether it's through DVC or my own network. Then I would take money from 2 VCs I respect, not one.
Yeah.
And we have that 1 vs. 2 VC podcast. I just believe, and there's this book called Super Forecasting.
Yeah.
And you know, if you talk about unknowns, there's this concept called dragonfly perspective.
Yeah.
There is also a concept of, I don't know which general of the US military said that, which is, watch your 6 o'clock. When you're flying a fighter jet in a war, you get shot down from behind. That's your 6 o'clock position.
Yeah.
Right? So that all of it, when you bring together, a dragonfly's unique thing is it has a 360 degree eyes. They can see everywhere. I would surround myself with people who become my dragonfly.
Yeah.
They are seeing everywhere. They are telling me the unknowns. They are doing all of this advice such that I don't need to be that smart. All these people will help me. So I would do that.
So I'm going to conclude this with at least my takeaways. And in case you want to add, please feel free. I think number one, which we keep reinforcing, is the ecosystem is deepening. It's a great time to start up. There are a lot of profit pools to be captured. Please make use of the ecosystem. Find the angel, find the network, talk to DVC, find the co-founder collector. There's so many ways that you can get information and cut cycles on PMF. And you should be using all of that. The second question that we sort of dealt with was, which kind of founder is going to create value? We've concluded all founders, all types of founders will create value. You could be the 24-year-old recent graduate. You could be the 30-year-old operator who's already built something in the past and has got close to a decade of experience. You could be a person who's already built a company and wants to start up again. All of them will create value. I think we had a joke internally to say what percentage of value will be created by young founders. And Avnish just said 42%. Again, Hitchhiker's Guide to Galaxy. Figure out your own tidbit around that. But effectively, all kinds of founders create value. The problems that plague a company are similar by state. 0 to 1, 1 to 10, 10 to infinity. So there isn't many differences on how those problems break out. The one part where we feel younger founders could benefit is thinking more probabilistically, in the sense, don't just be adamant on this is the one way to do it, rather find places where your business will fail. I think that resonated with me a lot, at least in my journey when I was starting up. I had assumed that I know everything, I'm smarter than everybody else, I will build it. And everybody who's saying anything different to me is wrong. But there were multiple articulations where folks said, you know what, this kind of business is tough to build because the math won't work out because of XYZ. The least I could have done at that point in time was at least chase that down and verify for myself. And I think that's the part that is easier now. You can pick up a phone, you can meet people for coffee and figure out your data points before you having to figure it out yourself in some form, right? So I think that's one big takeaway that I would give for the younger founders and to everybody who's thinking of starting up, think very deeply on why. It is a hard journey, but it's a great journey. And irrespective of wherever you end up, I ended up on the other side of it not working out, but I'd still say it was worth it. It's a chance to grow and you'll learn many more things in those X months, X years than you will otherwise. Does that mean you need to have the pressure to start up? Not really.
Yeah.
Take your time around that. Anything you want to add?
No, I just will go on a much more macro note. 2047, we are going to be a developed country. Do you want to be telling your grandchildren later, for the people who are at or the, your children later, that you were sitting on the sidelines when India became developed? Or were you inside and giving it your best? Whether you succeed or fail.
Yeah.
And my bet is even failure is temporary. Right?
Absolutely.
And we have so many founders who have then come back and created successful businesses. So I'm very much of the view that be on the field and play and do something for the country. And it is truly a privileged time that we are living in. And Bhavish says this well, ambition is not an option, it's a responsibility.
We should end there. Best of luck. Reach out to us if you're thinking of starting up. Cheers.